why you just set out to please me. That's all I need to say. And just for fun, I am pleased. What's the date?
December the 15th,
A.D. 14. A.D. 14 is fading away. Today, I had nothing to talk to you about at all. I just wanted to come out and see you. Fact. I mean, a lot of things happened, but I forgot my notes and bulletins. And laid out level zero. We've now got level zero laid out and level one laid out. And we know the substances and the materials exist for 2, 3, 4, and 6. They also exist for 5, but we're not teaching them. I should probably introduce a little piece of news here. HAS has become an academy course with a very strict curriculum, as per HCOB, I think, 8 December. Now, that is good news because it gives a sliding scale of courses. But it also shoves the PE course back down below zero, which is all right. This is usually taught at that temperature anyway. But it leaves the old PE just the same sort of mess around PE it always was. And it probably needs some improvement. And I've got a new design for the thing, such as a written book that I've already talked to you about and so forth. And I will still go ahead and put that out. One of the main reasons why HAS became an academy course was demand from minutes of national committees that were appointed to decide on pricing, all of which have now met, and pricing is all finalized, and no shocking new figures emerged. A lot of things happened that would be of considerable interest to the franchise auditors. The main advance along this course line was brought about by the fact that in the U.S. and some other places, they've apparently had a considerable amount of success in having a low-price academy course, which was the HQS, don't you see? And then bringing people on up into the upper course from there. Well, now the HQS is really just the old-time HPA. And what actually happened, you can't teach an old-time HPA, you see, dirt cheap, and still have it a quality course because you've got to have some instructors and you've got to have some people paying attention to this thing, so it can't be just thrown away, otherwise you're going to ruin every auditor you've got, you see? So HQS, being the old-time academy course, HCA-HPA, now when we move these on up the line, you remember that in HPA-HCA, you had yourself an awful time with axioms and things of that character. All those odd bits and pieces that everybody forgot until the last moment and gave you as extra reading and all those catastrophic occurrences and so forth, well, I just took up the whole kit and caboodle of those and shoved them into HAS. So they're studied all by themselves. Do you see? So HQS is a little bit of auditing, listen style, with certain definite finite results, and it's all this odd bit theory work and so forth. It actually, done all by itself, without the pressure of other things, is fairly easy hill to climb. What you find it a hard hill to climb is you had to sandwich it in amongst everything else. Most Scientologists, when you get right down to it, have trouble with just that little section and area, just axioms and definitions and vocabulary and little things like that. And they miss something back there somewhere. So I'm just making it easier to grasp at that level. But they wanted a course that somebody could buy a book and then they'd come in, you see, and have a course that didn't kill them that they could sell for a lower amount of money and so on. So the HAS course was all that was left to give them. And so there it was. And that isn't terribly dear to teach. And if it's taught pretty well, why, people come along very well. But that still puts PE still there and puts it below there. And although I don't think Central Orgs will really go on teaching a lot of PE, PE is then relegated to a field franchise type course. And I'm still going ahead and write the book for it and that sort of thing if I get around to it. I seem to be going downhill, not uphill. But that's because things are so well trimmed up on the upper realm of this activity. When you went all the way to the top, you see, why, then it was very easy to see what lay between it and the bottom. Now, it's a funny, very funny thing. You stand down in the valley, and you can't see the mountains for the trees. And there's barns in the road and everything, and you don't get a very good view. And you might think you're in the middle of a desert, and you're not, don't you see? You might think you're in the middle of Maine, and you're in Wisconsin, you know? But you get up to the top of the hill, why, you can take a look back across the countryside and see where all the little ripples and barns and trees and everything else are. And that's essentially what has happened here. And it's pretty easy to say where an auditor has to go and what his road has to be in order to make it through to the top. And I've just been dropping things like mad that are non-essential to that particular progress. But at the same time, there's a danger in dropping too much. And you get too much dropped out of the lineup, and you leave some gap that somebody will fall into. So it's, hence the gradation program is fixed up so that won't happen. Now, some of you are going out here, and you're going to say to yourself, well, now I'm going to just do myself up royally, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a lot of people, and I'm going to run them on R6, and I'm going to get them right out there, see, and boy, they're really going to sail. And you're going to get one of these people by the scruff of the neck, you know, raw meat, and you're going to set them down in the chair, and you're going to say, all right, now, let's start on the first end word. And that's absence, which it is. And you're going to look at the meter, and it's just going to sit there. And you'll chant this N-word. I'll have a pity on your colds and sneezes, and I won't chant it at you. But you'll chant it at this PC, see? And you'll say blank, blank, then laugh, 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 and your meter just sits there and so forth. And you're going to say, what are you thinking about? What are you thinking about in desperation, you know? And the PC's going to say, well, I wasn't, you know. I seldom do. And then you're going to find out that he has a perfectly open mind about it. And perfectly willing to sit there while you work. After you've done this a few times, why, you will say, what did Ron say about a gradient for PCs? And then you'll get sensible, and you'll start them right in at the bottom and roll them on up toward the top. Because there's a certain number of things which a humanoid is going to have to be able to do to make it. And there are certain things which humanoids can't do very well. And until you get them so that they can make an orderly forward progress over these particular barriers and bumps, why, you're not going to be able to do anything with R6. Now, you see, you yourself, as you get up toward the top of the barrel and you've been through lots of processing and so on, you forget how much auditing you've had. And you tend to discount it, you know, and so forth. And you make an immediate comparison between yourself and this guy who's walking down the street bumping into the trees and fire hydrants, you know. And you say, well, all I have to do is take him from where I am. See, on up. Only he's not where you are. And that is the basic error. So we want to get him up the line. You can rather rapidly. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands of hours. But it'll vary from case to case, of course, because the various cases are in worse shape than others. And its variability, it will pronounce itself and stick its neck out at the least expected intervals. For instance, you're going to find out as you're processing along, you're going to find this dear, nice old lady. And you snap, see nothing to it. And you run your communication processes, and it's fair. It's a little tonar of action. And you jump her up along the line. You get her into duplication. Well, it's fair, but it's not too good. And then you get her into PTPs, which is situated there at level 2. And you find out she didn't have any present time problems. And got everything all solved. And You'll be starting to get a little bit desperate about this time. You suddenly realize this case has gone no place. And then you suddenly find you have the continuing overt case. You've got the one that almost has to be manhandled, you know. She's got it all solved because all she does is cut somebody's throat anytime she has a present time problem or something like this. You could still be prepared, don't you see, to be tripped up on your forward progress because, of course, the unsolvable case, unless you can get them aside and corral their mad impulses to commit overts or something of the sort, is this person who's just going to be solidly dramatizing some overt. And probably never looked at it this way, but you realize that most solutions to problems of a desperate nature are overts. People solve their desperate problems with overts. And if you've got somebody who has a lot of problems, you have somebody who's committing a lot of overts. That's why that pair belongs so intimately together there, too. You're not going to find somebody who has no problems at all. You're going to find a gradient goes from, he has problems, perfectly normal. Yeah, he got problems. Down to his problems are absolutely desperate. Oh, my God. Nobody had problems like these, don't you think? Down to no problems at all. See? You're going downhill. It's the reverse order to the way the guy goes uphill, too. And in other words, the fellow who has no problems at all is the one you should be worried about. Because this person's got it all solved. He solves it with this great big overt every morning, don't you think? He has a perfectly quiet house now. He hits the baby on the head every morning, you know? And you'll run into the case that doesn't have anything to improve. You wonder if after a while you get curious as an auditor as to why this person is sitting in the PC's chair. You look at these goals that are set and they all seem to just be nothing and nowhere. Nothing important and so on. You'll say to the person, well, what happens? I mean, why do you want auditing? Is there anything about you that you're trying to improve or anything like that, even though that's for you? See, your curiosity will get the best of you. And the person will tell you quite surprisingly, this case is not infrequent. Most cases, I'd give you some, just a vague idea, maybe 1 in 30 or something like that. Matter of fact, I'm perfect. Well, why is he being audited? If he's perfect, well, how come? You see? Well, of course, he has never confronted any frailty. You have to handle that case very delicately, because if that case is on this borderline, if at any moment that case found he was doing something wrong, that would give him the last little push of personal degradation necessary to tip him right over the cliff. If this person is down to such a point on service facts and all the rest of it, down to such a point that if this person admitted that there was one tiny error that he committed in his life, it would finish him. And when you see these psychiatrists ramping and raving around trying to get somebody to admit that they're guilty or something like that, and you realize that they're dealing almost exclusively with the insane case, who can't admit, whose insanity is an affirmation of an error. In other words, they're confirming this error all the time. You ever see a little kid do this? He's just busted a glass, you know, or he busted a little piece of glass or something like this. And you say, Johnny, you shouldn't bust that glass, and he busts another piece of glass, you know. And then he just goes on busting more and more glass, and he just seemed to have nothing but strewn glass all over the place and so forth. He's trying to assert that it's right to break glass, don't you think? He feels to himself that if he admitted it was wrong to break glass, and if he himself realized that he was doing something wrong, he would be finished. That would be the final degradation. And there he would be on his way south with no parachute, see? And therefore, a murderer, a repetitive murderer, or something like this. I was listening to a copper yesterday on the subject of murder. And it was quite entertaining how they've got it figured out. Murder is a familial crime, and therefore is really not a crime. And it doesn't belong with the rest of crime. And is its own particular thing, which is entirely different. And that's why they're passing a law against hanging people for murder in England. Well, go ahead, you try to follow it through. Of course, if you're following it through, you're making the same mistake that everybody else makes when he tries to follow a pattern of aberrated logic. You can't turn that many corners too quick because it isn't that quick because it isn't logical. That's simple. And, of course, it's a non-comprehensible piece of balderdash into which somebody has argued himself and so forth. In other words, we have a guardian of the law arguing that murder is somehow not much of a crime and is right, but this boy himself was not arguing from his viewpoint. He was arguing from the parliamentarian viewpoint. He said this is what they think. And, of course, he receives his reports all the time explaining what they think and so forth, so he's probably quite authoritative on the line. I thought that was very interesting. The murder is not a crime. It's usually a familial affair. And I don't know where they got their statistics. There are a lot of murder statistics they don't have, such as the fact that only 3% of the murders committed are ever proven guilty. Anyone ever proven guilty is something like 3%. And I have even seen a figure adventured of what percentage of murders were detected. Now, that's just about the most adventurous figure to release I have ever heard of. Imagine somebody releasing such a figure. What percentage of murders were detected? Now, you get a society figuring that way. You get an individual figuring that way. And he's got it all figured out how something or other isn't a crime, and yet it is a crime. And he does it, and he gets the full recoil from it. All mental mechanisms are operating, and yet at the same time, he's got this thing totally suppressed because it's all right to do this, don't you see? It's all right to do this, except it kills him to do it, don't you see? It's all mixed up one way or the other. And you're going to be sitting there as an auditor looking at a case that's this snarled up along some particular line. And you probably say, why didn't I take up some other line of activity after a little while of this? Because it can get very, very confusing if you didn't have a pattern with which to track this case up along the line to sufficient responsibility to improve, or any one of the cases I have mentioned. If you didn't have a series of steps to walk up, why, you'd just never get these cases up. And that would be the end of that. Now, the only trouble you've had as an auditor is actually not walking cases up those steps. When you didn't, when you grabbed a guy on the fourth step, when he was on the first step, then the PC was not on the same step you were on, and therefore you and the PC were in disagreement. His state of case and your estimate of the case were in conflict. And therefore, to get any gain for that PC became impossible. And you began to think that it was all unreal and auditing didn't work or something was weird was going on. Yes, the type of auditing you were doing, the type of approach you had to that case, yes, absolutely correct, wouldn't work. It would work on the case later, after the case had been pulled up to step three. But at the time you were doing it on the case, then it's perfectly true to say that auditing wouldn't work on that case if auditing means exactly what you were doing with the case. If the case isn't advancing, auditing isn't working. So the problem of how to make auditing work is the discovery of an orderly, generalized step that can be taken with any case that will bring them up to the next step, where a generalized step can be taken with the case, don't you see? Look at the brain strain this saves you. After all, you don't want to strain your brains too much, because they ought to be preserved carefully. Psychologists and so forth got to have something to work with. And the strain which you would get into in this case is very horrible. Just, what do I do now, you say, you know. What do I do now? You see, very desperate. Case isn't advancing, and that sort of thing. What I've tried to do is give you a series of generalized steps that if you can get this case over this hurdle at this particular time, you can get the case over the hurdle, why, then you can now approach the case with this next activity, which will get the case over that hurdle. And now you've got the case there, and now you can get them over the next one without, in actual fact, costing you too much particularization. Now, there's one exception to this. The case, Book of Case Remedies is the totality of one step, in actual fact, the second level, which is devoted to overts and present-time problems. At that level, the individual, being in better communication with the auditor, being in better communication with life, then is able to face up to some of these actions, and you can take these actions and solve little things like hidden standards and so forth. But the trick is, how do you get him up to being run on the Book of Remedies? I know there's some of those remedies apply all the way south, but in general, how do you get him up to being worked on the Book of Remedies? Well, that's a totality of a level, you might say. Well, fortunately, there are things which a Thetan can do which are above his bank. In other words, a Thetan is always really senior to his bank. He always is. There are certain things on which a Thetan would become aberrated, whether he had a bank or not. The presence of the bank makes it difficult, if not impossible, for him to recover in the absence of auditing. And if he didn't have a bank, he would come out of it eventually. Do you understand? If he didn't have any bank at all, he wouldn't then go into a permanent spin on this particular subject, but would come out of it later. In other words, he'd walk in and out of aberrated conditions. He wouldn't just become more and more and more and more aberrated. He wouldn't be in a dwindling spiral, because the bank is designed to give the person a dwindling spiral. Now, the design of the bank is what makes the dwindling spiral, but of course a Thetan has to be capable of supporting a bank and giving himself a dwindling spiral too, don't you see? But at the same time, he's gotten this worked in so much that you can say it's a designed dwindling spiral from which he cannot recover. And that was beyond his basic planning. But there are certain things which a Thetan would become aberrated about, whether they are in the bank or not. Well, let's take a Thetan who isn't aberrated. And let's examine now what would happen to this individual, what would happen to him, if he didn't have a designed reactive mind. Of course, the reactive mind is the total design. Now, what would happen to him? What would he become aberrated on? Well, he could determine to become totally aberrated and go into a dwindling spiral and spin in. He could determine to do this, and he probably could make this stick with a great deal of ramification and so forth, mostly because he has done so in the past. Though we know for sure that he has that skill. But when we look at how complex and how calculated it must be, when we look this over and know the amount of trouble that he had to go to in order to get himself into this, and also realize that he could not possibly have realized how much trouble he was getting into, otherwise he would not now be trying to get out of it. Follow me? So he's also then capable of a miscalculation. He's capable of a miscalculation of how much trouble he can get into. I think that's quite fascinating. That's obviously one of his basic talents. Of getting into more trouble than he can foresee. And we look over several of these points, and we can trace out, just paralleling what he has done, regardless of the particularities and peculiarities of his peculiar particular bank, we see then that he is capable of having these things happen. Not necessarily done to him, but he's capable of having these things happen to himself. He's also capable of making things happen to himself. He's capable of setting up time, but he's also capable of setting up masses that suspend in time, as the GPM, and that hang timelessly. When I first figured that out, I figured it out a little bit in reverse. The masses that are hanging up endlessly in time are the masses that create time. I think that's marvelous. But anyhow, that's figured out both ways from the middle, you see. Now, therefore, a thetan is capable of a certain amount of aberration. But it's very difficult for him to aberrate himself to such a degree that he can't recover. And the only way he succeeds in doing this is blocking out duplication. Now, that's the only way he could totally booby-trap himself on a dwindling spiral. Now, that probably, you think, requires just a little bit of amplification. And yes, it certainly does, because it was a considerable discovery when made. You can't brush it off lightly with a sentence. But it goes back into our axioms on as-isness. Those axioms are all senior to the reactive bank. And it goes back to as-isness. And, of course, that which a thetan cannot as is going to endure. You get it? If he can't look it over and erase it by inspection, it's going to last forever. If he's totally unwilling to erase it, it would last forever. And also, the only way he can erase it is by being willing to duplicate it. You follow? You have to make a perfect duplicate in the spot where it is. That's demonstrable. So he has to be able to duplicate it. In other words, you'll just get madder and madder and madder at somebody that you're unwilling to be like. Let's take it at that mild state. You're unwilling to be like this person, so you're just going to be madder and madder and madder at this person, you see, and more standoffish. This person will eventually disappear. But not because he's gone, but because you can't see him anymore. You follow that? In other words, erasure, or knocking something out, or making something cease to exist, depends then on duplication, a willingness to duplicate it. So a thetan can become unwilling to duplicate something and cause it to endure. And now we're dealing with native thetan ability. This he can do. With malice aforethought, but apparently it's quite natural for the beast to do this. He's quite happy to do this. He likes to have things like bricks. So all he's got to do to have a brick is say, I'll never be a brick. There's bricks. You see? He's got modus operandi by which he proceeds. Do you see? You therefore have a universe. Well, a thetan is nothing, and he's unwilling to be something in terms of mass. So therefore, of course, he then gets an endurance of masses. It's the trick by which he makes mass endure. But he can be caught in this trick. And the way he caught himself, it took this amount of action to catch himself, is he made up a bank which told him what he should be willing to duplicate and what he shouldn't be willing to duplicate. And he made that bank up in two halves, He made it with the cowboys in the white hat that he must be willing to duplicate, and the cowboys with the black hat that he must be willing to duplicate. And therefore, you would find all the cowboys in the white hat duplicatable and thus disappearing, and all the cowboys in the black hat becoming more and more real and solid. And I frankly don't think that Satan ever figured this out at the beginning. Because he's for sure going to go on a dwindling spiral. And it depends on this one factor of duplication. Now, the gradient scale that leads to duplication is communication. Communication is a gradient scale toward duplication. I know you think it might work the other way, too, and sure it does. But you might not be willing to duplicate, well, let's say a bum on Skid Row. But you would say, here, my man, here's a quarter, or something like that. You communicate to that degree. In the process of communication, you might also get over, without obsessively duplicating him, the obsession not to duplicate him. And so then feel perfectly comfortable about talking to a bum on Skid Row. Do you understand? You can talk to a bum on Skid Row without being afraid of becoming a bum on Skid Row. Well, that's done by communication. Not only do you knock out the non-duplication, see, by mere communication, you not only knock out this ferocity of don't ever be that, see, but also knock out the don't ever be that. See? Both sides of that thing can get knocked out, and you suddenly find yourself able to talk to bums on Skid Row without feeling like a bum. You follow this? So, obviously then, the thing in the bank, which is the rough point, is duplication. Willingness to, unwillingness to. That's the rough point of the bank. And the gradient scale to that is communication, because that's cause, distance, effect with duplication and intention. Now, because it's a broader formula, you can take part of that formula called communication, and oddly enough, by practicing it, knock the duplication factor back into some kind of shape. You might not knock it into a totality so the bum on Skid Row disappears simply because you're making a perfect duplicate where he is, because that's not part of the intention, you see. But you'll knock it out to a point where whenever you even vaguely come near a bum on Skid Row, you don't have to say to yourself, oh, I must never become a bum on Skid Row. I must never become a bum. Oh, I'm a never. Okay? By the process of communication with this bum, that I must never, you see, gets knocked out, and one no longer is upset about becoming him or not becoming him. And so, therefore, he can talk to bums on Skid Row. That's it. Now, the fellow says, I'm never going to be in an automobile accident. I'm telling you now why your assist works. We're right at that level of action, but it actually is a much more subtly pervasive process than we ever imagined. It goes all the way. Such a thing as a touch assist or communication with the object and so forth. That's terrific stuff. Very powerful. And it doesn't always work because the guy doesn't always get flattened on it, you know. It might be a lot longer than you would ordinarily think in starting a process. You say, well, I'm going to audit him for 15 minutes and his gout ought to disappear, you see. Well, if you said, I'm going to audit him for 150 hours and his gout would disappear, you might have made it. And how much does it take? All right, let's get this person. He says, oh, I never want to be in an automobile accident. Ooh, horrible. Blood all over the place. No. Don't want to be anywhere near an automobile accident. Next thing you know, he's driving down the road. And the steering wheel just apparently all by itself turns around and runs him into a tree. Well, what has to happen in order for that to happen? He's gotten to a point where he can't duplicate a car. So therefore, he can't communicate to a car. So obviously, he can't control a car. So we get that which you resist, you become. We could rephrase that. That's perfectly true as it is. But we could also make a more fundamental observation of that which we're unwilling to duplicate will persist and eventually overwhelm. And the road out is not to go around obsessively duplicating it. As the young actor does, he says, I've got to live all parts of life in order to be a good boy in life. I've got to be a good actor. I've got to live all parts. You've seen artists go this route. I've got to make a bum out of myself. Let's see. I've got it on my schedule here. I've got to become pervert, a dope addict, and so on. In other words, I've got to live! Exclamation point, you see. I got to experience. Well, I've already gone this whole study. I've looked this whole study over, gone right down the line. I'm studying it very carefully, and I find out that the single action of experience is non-therapeutic. That's a fascinating thing. Experiencing something is not therapeutic. There is something, however, which is, and that's communicating with it. The guy's worried about becoming an alcoholic. He doesn't have to drink and experience alcoholism to get himself out of it. No, he'll more likely go the route. And he'll wind up down there with Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, embezzling their treasury or something. No, the thing to do if he's got this and so forth, well, he actually could communicate in some fashion and with something, with relationship to this subject, and all of a sudden that duplication factor would click out. See, the refusal to duplicate would click out, but the process of communicating. So that opens the door to a lot of think, you see. You can figure a case out here very nicely. You want to get a case over some kind of an obsession or something like that. Well, set this alcoholic down. Give him a bottle. Give him a glass. Now, what he mustn't do is experience it. See? That's the only thing you as an auditor have got to make sure he doesn't do. It's non-therapeutic. But communication, yes, he's got to communicate with it. And you just run, reach, and withdraw from the bottle, from the glass. Get photographs of alcoholics on Skid Row or something of the sort and have him reach and withdraw from the photograph. Anything you want to do, any way you could figure it out. And the guy all of a sudden would not be able to become an alcoholic if he worked at it. That's what I mean by it's very hard to hold a psychosis or neurosis in place. Well, that makes sense if you realize that the simple communication will unbalance it and knock it out. But what does it knock out? It knocks out the ferocity that one isn't going to duplicate. Oh, my God, I would never be a psychiatrist. No, never, never, never be a psychiatrist. They're a bunch of dogs, bums. See? Watch it. There he is down there at the registrar's office at the local university signing himself up. Well, I guess I better take this course. Next 12 years, I'll be studying away. I don't like it, don't seem to have any aptitude for it, but I gotta be it. Do you see what's happening? It's very interesting. There's a very, very, very notable personality in the world today. A very notable, newly ushered upon the stage of politics and nations, who has a 48-hour com lag on won't, got to. Knowing that, you could destroy that man just like snapping your fingers. He's a near nut. He's only got a 48-hour com lag between saying, I will not, under any circumstances, to doing it. And he's got a tremendous number of these, I will not, under any circumstances. And if you very carefully examine the record, you'll find out that the com lag is about averaging 48 hours. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. I think that's fascinating. That's the wildest thing you ever saw. 48-hour com lag. Of course, forgive him, he knows not what he does, and he's just a humanoid. Well, I don't think he should be that pig-brained. He never notices this about himself. I will not, under any circumstances, increase the bank rate. Increase the bank rate. Oh, it won't have anything to do with the multilateral force. U.S., we're with you. Why can you detect it on this man? If you followed it very closely and you knew these mechanisms, how could you detect it? Well, he just happens to be in the public presence. He just happens to be a humanoid, and he's so much in the public presence, and he happens at the moment to be in a lot of trouble that it would take a Superman to figure out. He'd have to be at least level zero to figure him out. That he's spectacular, you see, merely because the spotlight's on him. How many people are like this? He's not single and solitary and alone. So you have to watch this very carefully. Wherever you see these, I will not, and they shall not, and you see that bird up in that pulpit, you know, and boy, he's talking about hellfire and damnation. He's talking about sin. Watch him, brother. Watch him. Don't be caught alone in that vestry, you girls. Are you boys? He's again it. And he's saying at that moment, I refuse to duplicate it. He's immediately forecasting this, that he's not going to observe it or its consequences in a very short space of time. It's going to sort of cease to exist. It's where was it? Why was I so angry about it yesterday? I'm it. Don't you see? It's horrible to be home. I didn't mean to enter English politics that violently, but I don't think that I have entered it any more briefly than he has. I usually abstain from politics. He should have. But there's what you tune your your observation up to. I've shown it to you out in the public sphere. You can watch this. It would be a good stunt to go back and look in the papers of just the last few weeks and find the I will nots followed by the more or less 48-hour lag. Fascinating. Well, you look at your PCs. But you're doing something that has not occurred before on this planet. Therefore, it's very easily confused and gotten upset about is because you're taking people who yet have some tiny inkling that they can get better. But all through their auditing, that must be improved. And therefore, this emphasis on wins. That's how we must keep the PC winning. Keep the PC at cause and winning. We mustn't ever knock them around into a situation where they believe they can't better themselves. Have them get tremendous auditing failures, you see, with a tremendous crash. And it's that little point of self at cause which must be reached. And of course, your readiest people to reach are those people who do believe they can do something about themselves. They're very easy to handle. But rekindled by various mechanisms such as example, discussion, that sort of thing. In others, you see, and you're working with that level of society, and you're not following the route of there are 8 million nuts, and so therefore we have 8 million people in our charge, and therefore we get appropriations to take care of these 8 million people. Don't you see? That's the old approach. And that's why nobody was really interested in doing anything about anybody. You're being paid for their disabilities.
Well, now, you're going at it on a reverse line. And that reverse line isn't harder. Actually, that reverse line is easier. It's always easier to indulge in a successful activity than one which simply holds everybody in cages and they grunt and groan, you see. You follow that? Because it's more rewarding. The actual fact is it's easier to make somebody better than it is to make them worse. A Thetan resists getting worse. He's resisted it for ages. And he's so used to resisting getting worse, don't you see, that it's a brand new vector. It's a brand new vector to say you can get better, and he finds it very hard to resist this. He has no built-up resistance to this at all. And you keep telling him he can get better, and he keeps hearing he can get better, and so forth. And then all of a sudden he begins to realize that he himself would have to do something about it in order to get better. At that point, he moves up, and he gets to the point, finally, realizing he's not now going to get worse. And he, at that point, is a release. And if you're not at least working with a release on R6, why, the guy is just sitting there going through some kind of motions, and the environment around him is going to smash him in, and his cognitions, you see, aren't really very pertinent. It's rather ridiculous to listen to his cognitions. He's running the actual basic points of the bank, and you'll find him cogniting on the fact of, oh, I see now. Maybe that's why I cut my finger yesterday. Maybe that's why I sometimes cut my finger, yes. It solved my life, you see. He's running some engram to kill everybody in sight, don't you see? He doesn't cognate at any magnitude, don't you see? There's nothing going on, really. And you're just handling charge, and there's no PC there much to handle a charge, and you can just assign it to the point that you, as the auditor, are running through now at R6 the same experience that Dianetic auditors had perpetually. They could always knock out somebody's arthritis, and they would be very, very happy as an auditor to have fixed up somebody's lumbosis or something of the sort. The only difficulty was the PC hadn't found out about it. Actually, you could force somebody through an auditing session, cure them up one way or the other, straighten them up like mad, fix them up so they never had any more domestic trouble. You do the wildest things with these people, you see. And it was like repairing a typewriter. It was still a typewriter. And one of the reasons we came off of Dianetics is because self-determinism and other factors of that character had entered in. We ourselves, in this study, had found out that there was something there. And there was something doing it. There was something getting better. And it wasn't all just negative gain. It was also positive gain, hence Scientology. Now, the auditing styles are all part and parcel of this. So you've got these things plotted at the most win, or the most likely win, at that level where you find the PC. Now, the PC originally will most likely win at level zero. It isn't that you need tremendous, new, sparking, beautiful processes in order to push this PC up the line. No, he's more likely to win with this very simple process of Itza. He's just talking. He finds out he can talk to somebody. Big win, man. Terrific. It isn't what you're erasing. It isn't what you're doing. Nothing like that. So, the auditing style then is adjusted to the most likely progress for the PC. You possibly have never much thought of this subject of how does the PC receive auditing? How does the PC react to auditing? We think in more in terms of the PC has a case and the case gets better, don't you see? Or the case improves, the PC's behavior improves, or his environment improves, or something like this. And we probably don't too often equate that to just this. That's the PC's reaction to the processing. The PC then responded to a certain level of processing. That's why the PC won. He didn't necessarily respond to a particular button that was pushed on his case. You see, we've always had with us this other factor that just auditing, almost gobbledygook auditing, was quite capable of improving somebody's case. Did you ever get puzzled about this? Did you ever see anybody in doing TRs get a case win? Well, why? There's no process. And sometimes, particularly back in 54, there were quite a few auditors around who were absolutely mad on this subject of the process. The process was everything, and there was no auditing connected with the process. The process did it all. They didn't have to do anything. The PC didn't have to do anything. You see, they had it mixed up like it was a pill or something. I quickly broke them of this, but fast as found. But the point I'm making is here is actually, yes, the process very valuable. Unless you knew what processes to run, he'd soon come to a point of no gain, don't you see? But the actual fact is that the actions of auditing all by themselves, completely devoid of processes, account for a very respectable portion of the PC's gain. It makes a terrific mystery to some auditor who sees, if he sees, that Joe always gets gains on the PC. But the question he's liable to ask Joe is, what did you run on them? Now, the answer to the question is, how did Joe run PCs? It's how he was audited. It wasn't what was audited on the PC. And that is something that we have never paid very much attention to and haven't covered it to any great degree. But you will find it in auditing styles. It is how you audit the PC to a gain. And frankly, if you were simply to ask him about his old boots and hobbies, that it's a style, don't you see? He doesn't see everybody being very significant, saying, well, what questions do you put on the blackboard? Well, at that level, it just doesn't matter what questions you put on the blackboard. You shouldn't put too beefy a one on the blackboard that's too significant, because that isn't what's happening. It's the style. You're conditioning somebody to speak to somebody else. That's what you're doing. He finds out he can talk without getting his throat cut. Hey, there's somebody I can communicate with. It's his most usual cognition. Whether he expresses it or articulates it or not, that's usually his cognition. Well, actually, it doesn't do much good to run him beyond that cognition. That's the ability regained. But it's regained by the style, don't you see? All right, now let's take the very next style above this, which is muzzle auditing. Boy, that's quite a jump. That's a fantastic discipline. And unless you train your PC to some degree as to what's expected and show him what this auditing cycle is and what this muzzle auditing is all about, he can't predict it and he doesn't know what to do and he tries to fall back into ITSA. Well, no, let's just graduate him upstairs in a hurry because he's quite capable now, you see, of taking this step. He has learned he could talk to somebody. All right, now let's teach him this other thing that he could enter into a piece of this drill. And that is, when he's asked a question, to actually look it over and answer it. And that's something. Do you realize that that is a sort of an 8C all by itself? That's a fabulous thing, too. And, you know, there's tons of PCs I've seen that somebody's trying to audit them on some upper level who have never gotten that skill. They've never been able to do that. You ask them a question, you know, do birds fly? And they say, birds. I visited the Smithsonian Institute one time or another. You see, look on that as not something fundamentally wrong with the case, so much as an inability, which can be knocked out and the ability of it can be regained. Can you answer a question when you're asked one? And if you put muzzle auditing to the PC on that basis, all right, now we're going to go through a long series of processes and processing and so forth, and one thing which is at stake here is whether or not you can answer the question you've been asked. That's quite a process all by itself, isn't it? Therefore, he'd take very kindly to your saying, I'm sorry, Ed, I don't think you answered the auditing question. I guess I didn't. Well, I'm not so good at it yet, am I? Instead of ARC breaking. He had an understanding that this completely aside from other things being run on him, that basic fundamental is something he should learn how to do. And you can pull him up short then, can't you? You can say, well, hey, you know, let's see if we can't get a little bit better at this. You know? All right, now in this next session here, we're going to see if you're very good at this. We're running times you've communicated. All right, that's fine. That's all we're running. But let's see if we can't really get the ball here. Well, what in essence is the whole gain of 8C, which is one of the most fabulous processes. You don't think patting a wall is going to do anything for anybody. Well, it isn't going to do very much. It's reach and withdraw from mist and that sort of thing. Well, that's fine. Yes, we know there's a gain involved with it. But what is it essentially? The guy finds out that he can execute an auditing command. Well, it's pretty interesting. After a while, you find out. You know, when he says to walk over there, you know, I do. And when he says touch the wall, I do. And then the next thing that it picks up, all in one fell swoop, is duplication. And boy, the individual who has individuated from all of life on the basis of not being able to duplicate anything in life is a mighty lonely Joe. He's way out, man. He can't be anything. Remember the old beingness process? He can't be anything because he can't duplicate anything. Well, this is all part and parcel to orders, too, isn't it? You'll find out that this person, when you give him an order, you say, put the cans down, and so forth, why, he'll put them in his pockets or something. Well, unless you've gotten a human being out of that wobble and scrabble and so forth, you haven't improved his ability to confront existence. Because, of course, he can't see those things he can't be. Can't duplicate, in other words. Well, duplication is simply repetitive action. I may have skipped over that a little fast for you. Some of you may remember the old beingness process. That was taught up in London about 1954. A Thetan can only be what he can see. And what he can't see, he can't be. And you can only see something because you can duplicate it. Actually, you can't see anything. You know the remarkable stories and reports you get of an accident. Well, it's peculiarly an accident. It isn't that people's observation in general is bad. They're looking at something they jolly well don't want to be. And so you get the most distorted stories of what happened at this accident. A cop is always up against this. He always gets a half a dozen different stories. And how a court ever admits evidence of watching a crime as reason enough to hang somebody, I wouldn't know, because it's the most unreliable evidence in the world. Because, of course, the fellow couldn't see it. Can't be it. He just knows very well that he wouldn't want to be hit by a car. So he actually doesn't see anybody hit by a car. Well, you have a slight occupational liability as an auditor. Is that you're looking at a PC all the time that you don't particularly want to be. You're trying to improve him, aren't you? Well, fortunately for us, it isn't necessary for you to be willing to be aberrated to get well. Follow that thought through. It isn't necessary for you to be willing to be aberrated to get well. See? Because we have the whole anatomy of the reactive bank, there's no sense in it. You see, if a Thetan didn't have a reactive bank and he hadn't made his CPM and he hadn't agreed on all of this and so forth, he would probably be completely unaberratable. He couldn't be aberrated at all. There would be no dwindling spiral. See, there's basic things that you say could get wrong with him. But in actual fact, he wouldn't have any of those things wrong with him. He would actually have to determine to have something real wrong with him. And when he determined it as thoroughly as make a complete reactive mind that would keep him crazy from there on out, this was almost the accidental perfect trap. The trap he ordinarily wouldn't fall into. But there he was in it. He did it. You see, he had to decide to be aberrated with exclamation points for some reason or other best known to him. And then having decided so, he was too stupid to get himself out of it. It's just, you see, that's what's wrong with everybody means, in essence, that the other things that were wrong with him actually have blown. There's just that one thing left. There were a lot of things that could have been wrong with the Thetan, but that one. He had to decide to be aberrated. He had to decide to make and create and put in place and continue to create the reactive bank in the universe. He had to decide this all off his own bat, incredible as it may seem. He could have been grieved, and he could have been persuaded, and he could have talked to somebody, but let's not miss the point. He did do it. And having done it, why, he was then in the soup. And that's actually all we're unwinding. There isn't anything else there to unwind. But because there's so many locks on the reactive bank, and because it tends to group and bunch up and get in re-stimulation, you have degree of aberration of cases. There are certain basic things that can go wrong with a Thetan which are above the level of the reactive bank and GPMs. And these certain basic things include duplication and communication. They can be aberrated all by their little old lonesomes, regardless of any N-word. Yes, there are some N-words that have to do with these things. But that really doesn't matter. These are then not low-level ideas. These are very high-level ideas. These would be native to any Thetan anyway, whether he had a bank or didn't have a bank. And you can work on them and you can improve them, because they have such a strong influence. You see, these things he should be able to do pretty well. He shouldn't be stumbling around on communication and duplication. Bank or no bank, N-words or no N-words, you see. And actually, they do improve rather remarkably. And he comes upscale to a point where he can confront bank and that sort of thing. So what are you asking him to do? You're asking him to, at ITSA, your listen style auditing, you're asking him to communicate and find out he's doing it, and he does. And somebody's going to receive the communication, so much therefore it must be communication. It proves it to him that he is communicating because somebody's receiving it, don't you see? And then we go up to the next stage here of muzzled auditing. Now he's got to receive a communication, and he proves it by answering it. You follow? And then he proves it to himself that he has answered it. And he proves it to himself he has received a communication because the auditor is satisfied with the fact that he's answered the auditing question. And, of course, any time the auditor lets the PC receive a communication or a question that he doesn't answer, then the PC is not then satisfied because he knows he didn't answer the auditing question, and so, therefore, he begins to doubt his own ability to receive a communication. It's as elementary as that. Then he's doing you in as the auditor by not answering the auditing question. It isn't that the process wouldn't work unless it were received or anything like that. No, he now doubts that he's received the communication. And he doubts he's received the communication because he didn't answer it. And then the auditor didn't call him up on the fact that he didn't answer the incoming communication. So, therefore, everything gets kind of unreal to him. No, he's proving it to himself continuously by answering the auditing question that he is capable of receiving a communication, because it proves itself. He's answered the thing he received. And not only that, but he can do it repetitively. He can do it again and again and again and again and again. And when he first gets the idea of answering three questions in a row, man, he's ready to go round a bend. You may not realize it, but you ask some people the same question just twice, and they blow up in your face. Do you ever have that happen? Ask them the same question twice. So therefore, you've got to make a point to the PC. Now, we are going to get you so that you can answer several questions in a row. All the same question. And he'll begin to see this as a skill. All right, so we got muzzled auditing. Now, the next level is mainly devoted to, is there something there? Now we're up to guiding style. Is there anything there? You see, the whole world to him is reasonless. Although he's being very reasonable about everything, actually there's no reason for anything. He's on the lower harmonic of the truth. all reasons have to be dreamed up, but he's down to a point where there really, the average human being, there's no real reason for anything. He doubts, for instance, that there's any real reason for him to be unhappy. He's unhappy, but there's no reason for him to be unhappy. There's nothing making him unhappy. You get this expressed all the time as, I feel nervous today. Somebody says, I feel nervous today. It's an accepted fact. There's nothing causing this nervousness. And so you get people going off into numerology. You know, like on the 17th of the month, I feel nervous. And it has something to do with the number 17, and 1 and 7 added together make 8. 8 is money, so therefore it must be money. But that person is still trying to find a reason for his nervousness. You find the bulk of the society does not ever try to find any reason for their nervousness. And you, very often as an auditor, completely baffled. You say, all right, let's find out why you've got the headache. And you see the person says, oh, no. You just said something awfully silly. There's no reason to have a headache. One simply has a headache. Of course. Now, the doctor gets far too serious about this. This person has a headache every once in a while, so the doctor wants to remove the brain. It's like the American military with their overkill. I think it's fascinating, a fascinating word, overkill. They've got 1,000 times overkill now in the arsenals in the United States. They've got enough atom bombs to kill every man, woman, and child on Earth 1,000 times each. I don't know how you compute that. You'd almost have to be a Scientologist to even approach it. And by that I mean, yes, well, you could figure out that every lifetime you could kill them, you'd have enough to do that, so we could stretch it out in Scientology. It makes sense. But it doesn't make any sense to them because they think you only live once anyway. And you're just a brain, see? So it's a completely senseless statement. Overkill. Why should they have one? Now, you take reasons for headaches and things like this, completely beyond people. They've got a headache. They've got a stomachache. Now, once in a while, you get a big cognition out of somebody, you know? I say, well, I've got terrible stomachache today. What you're missing, you see, is you yourself know that things cause things. You're not living in a causeless world and environment, you see? So it doesn't make any sense to you to have somebody over there that you're talking to living in a causeless world. The stomachache is a fact. Nothing caused it. It appears and disappears with complete mysteriousness. And you get a big cognition out of them one day when you ask them, well, did you eat something that disagreed with you? And once in a while, if you ask somebody that under those circumstances, they would say, hi, George, I did. I had 20 raw weenies last night. I'll bet that's what, But you wonder, and what you would become hung up with is, why? Why the emphasis they're putting on this, see? How come they seem to be so happy about this, or they seem to be so relieved about this? Well, that isn't what they're cognizing on. They're cognizing on the fact that stomach aches could be caused by something. That there is cause. Big idea. Big brand new idea. See? And they'll be pleased as punch. They haven't really grappled with the idea itself, you see. But just suddenly they're very relieved about something. Then this goes hand in glove with it. Natively, I'm just not a stupid man. There's something that causes my stupidity. You see? That thought goes along with it. Then they get other thoughts. My life doesn't have to be a horrible mess all the time. Maybe something in my vicinity is causing this. And they do terrific resurgence. Maybe something is causing the condition I'm in existence. Maybe it isn't just reasonable that husbands and wives fight all the time. Maybe something is causing this. Well, of course, it's the wife, naturally, you know. Then they'll hit the handiest target. You see? But in other words, you've now got the guy looking. He's got a new idea, a brand new idea, that things are caused. That's terribly elementary, isn't it? It isn't something you ordinarily would even look at or even respect as a source of aberration, and yet it's one of the primary ones. Your guiding style auditing gets him to look around in his life and find the causes of things. Now, having found them, of course, you can do something about them. As you will get another bulletin on this, it's covering here the bulletin of November 6, 1814. But there's another bulletin, just a little more recent than this, which talks about what styles you use with remedies. It's the beginning of a series of bulletins about how to adapt auditing style to the Book of Remedies, just neating up level two, you see. And there's guiding secondary style, which is the most elementary thing in the world, although you'd use it in session, although you would also use it in assist. It's peculiarly adapted to several remedies, which is simply steer plus itza. Steer plus itza. We used to have a number for it. Steer plus itza, see. And you guide the guy into talking about something to get a tone arm blow down, and then you make him talk about it, you see, to get the tone arm action out of it. And then while he's talking about it, he mentions several new things, don't you see, that give him tone arm action, so you note those things down, and you come back afterwards and talk about those things, don't you see? Well, that's the process that goes with it, but this other is just a pure style all by itself. He gets PC to look, and then you steer him, and he's looking. You herd him around, head him off here, and head him in there, don't you see? And then you get him to talk about what you have found while holding him on this subject. You don't let him wander. And he itzes on this subject. Well, itza this, and itza that, and itza something rather makes a marvelous assist. Remedies A and B, of course, the first two in the book of case remedies, so the auditing style with which they're handled should be quite considerably described, because they're the most flagrant ones. They have to do with definitions. And definitions in Scientology are the present subject. You mustn't miss that it's present subject, immediate subject. It's the immediate subject the guy's trying to study. You see, it's not just applicable to Scientology. This guy's trying to study engineering. And he hasn't understood a term in engineering, all right? Well, you could handle that, see, with remedy A. Remedy B is former subject. That's what makes them different. He's got the present, immediate subject mixed up with some former subject. So now you've got to find the former subject and find the word in it which hasn't been defined. Well, anyway, these have nothing to do with clay tables, you see. They are processes all by themselves, and they are guiding secondary style. But the only difference between guiding secondary style and guiding primary style, or just call it guiding style, is a guiding style runs in and does a repetitive. You guide, and you do a repetitive process on it. You guide, and you do a repetitive process on it. And we want that process to be the dominant process for level two, because it teaches the two things the fellow is now doing. Okay? He's finding out that there is some cause, and then he can answer questions about it and look at it. So you've still got repetitive action on a cause. But this is the style that is improving him. It's quite important what you find, but it's only partially what you find. He's got this new style. Things cause things. Wow, see? Gee, the world isn't all a solid block with no distance between anything. There's A causing B, and there's B reacting to A, and golly, this brand new world out here. There is some reason for things, don't you see? Buildings don't just suddenly disappear in a puff of smoke, don't you know? There'd have to be an explosion. Big cognition, see? And then after the explosion, why, the bricks would be lying around on the ground. And what causes bricks to lie around on the ground? Well, there must have been an explosion to cause it. And although the person realizes these things instinctively, he never thinks them out or looks at them. Things cause things. And life, then, looks entirely different to him, because he's no longer just a pawn. If things cause things, you might be able to predict. If things cause things, you might be able to do something about something. If things cause something, you might be able to do something yourself.
Hey, whoa, what do you know? Gee whiz, you know? And that's the doors you're opening at that particular level. You're guiding him, and he finds causes. And having found causes, you can now do something about the thing, too.
Wow.
You find out he's been suffering from a present time problem, from same problem all along the line, and now you say, well, what communications didn't you ever finish on to that person? Oh, so and so and so and so. Problem gone. You've asked the question repetitively. What communication haven't you finished the person? 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 Maybe only 10 minutes worth. The tone arm action disappeared.
Wow. I don't have any worry about Aunt Martha, you know. Gosh.
What's underpinning him? He's stuck all over the universe. And by this causes of things, and that he could locate it, and then do something about the cause, and straighten out that situation, that's pretty fabulous. And that's basically what he is finding out at level two. So, it's the style that's doing it. You're always beating yourself over the head about how clever you have to be. Actually be clever enough to realize that the style is doing it. Now, by the time he's learned all that, it's perfectly safe to run him on an abridged style. Muzzled auditing, the PC cognited or did something or other and didn't answer the auditing command. Of course, because we're teaching him what we're teaching him at that level, is that he can receive and answer an auditing command. We must say, always, I will repeat the auditing command, so forth, so forth, so forth. Always at level two, but not at level three, because our PC is now capable of doing that. Why rub it in? A lot of people get irritated after they've been through the basic of the thing. At first, it seems to be all right to them to have this happen and so forth, but after a while, it isn't all right. The auditor's sitting there saying, like a wound-up doll, they said, oh, I just realized that solves the whole problem of life. I will repeat the auditing command. Well, why is the PC now reacting that way? The PC might not have reacted that way earlier on the line, you see. The PC's now over this hump, and you're auditing something that doesn't have to be audited, so you have an abridged style. And it's, of course, abridged is termed to the lower styles. It isn't an abridged upper style. It's only an abridged lower style. So it's the styles for zero, listen, one, muzzled, and two, guiding. And now we can abridge them. And by abridge, we mean we can look and see what's going on. Now the PC is getting pretty good because he thinks his life is more easy to handle and that sort of thing. You find out his PTPs are blowing quicker, that various things are happening with the PC that wouldn't happen ordinarily and so forth, and you're just slowing down the whole progress of the game by putting in the whole package, do you see? How do we do a present-time problem? PC says he has a present-time problem. We don't guide him into it. We say, what is it? Bang! See? And he says, wow, it's a present-time problem. I got an awful problem. I got to go to Aunt Martha's tea party, and my God, I always die every time she feeds me a cup of tea. She boils it for 15 hours on the back of the stove. You know, you could float a sounding lead in it. Well, all right, you say, fine. Is it blown? If it's blown, you don't do anything else. In other words, this is audit by pure result. Having brought our PC up and gotten him out of his nappies, why, we can now let him walk. See? He says it's a present-time problem. That's what it was. We saw the reaction on the meter, and it blew. Oh, well. An auditor would be very foolish to pursue this thing. In fact, he'd get the PC all invalidated if he pursued it, don't you think? Well, that's the end of that present-time problem. But if the PC sort of looked grooved on it and so forth,
You'd say, well, give me some communications that you haven't given to Aunt Martha. Well, he says so-and-so. You get multiple answers and things of this character. That's where that belongs. Well, I didn't do that, and I didn't do that. And you find a PC eventually gets indoctrinated into a multiple answer. You ask him one question, he gives you the five answers necessary to flatten it, and that's the end of the process. Along about the fifth question, you get a blowdown on your tone arm, and that's it. Well, by golly, auditing can happen at an awful rate of speed. And you watch some PC who is well indoctrinated as a PC, who's you know, had enough gains now. It isn't that they're trained, it's that they've had enough gains, so they're more self-determined, they're more present, they're more there. And they can as-is things now. They don't just dodge, you know. And you ask this PC, you'll see some auditor do this sometime in some session, and I'm sure somebody at level one would say it's awfully sloppy auditing. Do you have a present time problem? The PC said, yeah. Yeah, I was afraid I was going to be late for the session. Realize I haven't, and so forth. And the auditor says, all right, thank you. Now, what we're going to do this session? Lower scale person said, what went on? You know, that auditor didn't handle that PC's present time problem. Oh, yes, that auditor did. That auditor's good enough now to notice that meter moved. If the meter didn't move, well, he would ask him another question. In other words, you audit against a finite result. And that's abridged auditing. You just audit against what you want to have happen. You audit enough to make that happen. You don't audit another step beyond it. You make sure you've got the tone arm action out of a question. You do not then run it for 20 minutes to find out if the tone arm action's out. In other words, you're good enough at this particular time to know when the tone arm action is out of something during the last 10 minutes of the run or the last 5 minutes of the run, don't you see? Well, that tone arm is starting to climb, and that tone arm is not now blowing down. You must be into some other zone of action, and the PC has been going on. You've been going on with your process, don't you see? And you see that this tone arm action is out. It's gone. You're going to give this thing a 20-minute thing and stick that tone arm up good? No, you're not. In other words, you don't now give it a 20-minute test or something like that, as you would, you see, that guiding style. Guiding style, grind it through, man. Don't take any chances. But at this level, you see, why, blue. PC says they had PT problem. We'll go to blue. All right, you know you're not going to get anything out of that. And besides, you don't want to audit Aunt Martha anyway. So you just sail on through, pocket it, pocket it, pocket it. You're just auditing against the finite result. You want that result. You want that cognition. You want that ability regained. Now, of course, what's the PC learning? Wow. He's learning that he gets a finite result. When he gets audited, something happens. And he doesn't get beaten to pieces because something happened. He just, when he gets audited, something happens. Bow, bow, you see? He's taught against the finite result. The auditor also, at this point, realizes you can obtain a finite result from auditing. Hence, abridged. Everything is out except the absolute essential action. The whole works is out. So the PC's audit being audited now against direct result. He doesn't say another word beyond what is necessary to obtain that result, and he is upscale far enough now to know when he's gotten the result. PC's comm lags are all the same now. The thing is regained. The ability is regained. The PC's had a big cognition. Tone arm action seems to have damped on this particular thing. Well, out, right? Don't fool around. Now, we've got direct style auditing. We've got direct style auditing. Now, if you'll notice, an abridged style is not necessarily direct. It's simply got things missing out of it. And some of the things I said about the auditing against the finite result apply to direct auditing style more than they do abridged. That is to say, you've got the exact result. Direct means straight, concentrated, intense, applied in a direct manner. We do not mean to sense direct somebody or to guide. We mean it is direct. Boom! You understand? Now we're getting somebody up that some PC realizes he can be given one god-awful assignment. He's supposed to just carry it out, and that's it. Big look, see? All right. We'll just apply this to pay table clearing. Give me a subject you want to improve. We're not going to have a PC saying giving a go or something like that, because if he's been brought up properly, why, he, of course, won't tell us to be clear. Well, he'll give you a subject he wanted to improve. To be clear, he doesn't answer the Auden question at all. It's a goal. And it isn't even a GPM. So then you try to audit that. Of course, you've already flunked. But you say to this fellow, all right, give me a subject you want to improve. He says, I'll golf. All right. Tell me something there that you, some term, things like that, and golf never understood. Four. All right, good. Represent it in clay. You didn't label that. I know, that's a golfer. You didn't label it. What do you mean I didn't label it? I got a sign on it, golfer. Yeah, I know. I've got some pants on. Oh, you're on the course? The club, label it. If that's what it is, go ahead. All right. Well, I'm glad you realize the fellow's in a shooting jacket. All right, good. All right. Is that it? PCs, you know. Well, go on. All right. Give me another term you didn't understand about that. Greens. All right. Represent greens and clay. Now, from the PC is coming a total shower of action. The PC's action is all direct back. Direct. Straight to the auditor. Doesn't expect anything. Doesn't even expect any encouragement. He just work, move, you see? And to somebody outside, looks like the auditor isn't doing any work, and looks like nobody's doing any work, looks like the PC's running the whole session, looks like the PC's in total control of the whole session. Of course, the PC would be in total control of the whole session right up to the moment when he failed to go to that club. You understand? And then in R6, of course, we combine all these styles. The person does them one and another and the other one. The PC, by that time, can stand up to it. So it's bringing a PC upright. It isn't just training the auditor. You understand audit styles a little better? Yeah. All right. Thank you.